viewers, welcome to Safety Man Security Consulting, Safety Man live stream, making sure that we're doing good, connection available, says we are live, we are good. I'm gonna have everybody introduce themselves.
Marius Reed III.
Sorry, hold on.
Now we're just making sure that everything is streaming. You know, this is our first time doing both a podcast and a live stream. And the rookie over here, Anthony, is still playing with his phone, so we're getting some feedback on that.
Okay.
But looks like it's going live over there.
Yeah, it is live.
All right,
good.
Cool. We are live. So go ahead and introduce yourself, Anthony.
So I'm Anthony Sicali. I've been doing a couple episodes now with Corey, and today we decided to bring on a friend of mine who's in the world of directing, Mario Cerrito.
Nice to meet you.
So, yeah, so I thought, you know, this would be a good episode to talk about a lot of different things, but let's start maybe with your background. Like, you know, you want to tell us how you got into this world?
Yeah, so I wrote a screenplay in 2007 that I didn't know what to do with. I always wanted to see my stuff out there, but I had no connections, nothing like that. I didn't know what to do. I put it away. I met my wife in 2011. She saw it was like in my closet, and she read it, and she said, you know, you should see what you could do about getting this made. And I had no background in film, never went to school for it. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know how to get that made. And she goes, no, start trying to see what you can do. So I reached out on Facebook. I met a couple producers, learned under them, and then I kind of ran with it and did my own thing. So.
Really? So yeah. You had that screenplay just kind of sitting around?
Sitting around.
You know, it's normally, nothing good comes out because my wife found it in my closet.
Right, right. Yeah, nothing good. Lucky it didn't end up in the trash.
But this time it did.
Yeah, so she read it and she's like, try and get this made because it's really good.
Really?
And yeah, she must have visionized, you know, she saw that it was better than some of the stuff she's watched on TV and mm-hmm. all that, and that's how it started. So she read it and then I kind of took it, the bull by the horns, and got it made. And
so how close is it today from what it was when you when she found it, like when you tucked it away?
In terms of like how far I progressed, you're saying? Or
like this is what the screenplay was and this is what it is now?
That screenplay that she read, actually, so what happened was I just made a trailer for it. I never got the funding for it. So that was like kind of just like my very beginning, and I learned like the process, and it only made it to like a trailer, like a 2-minute trailer. And then I wrote another movie after that called Deadly Gamble. That's where I met Anthony. That was in 2013, which I wrote that screenplay, and that turned into a real full movie.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's how it evolved. But that, like, the first one that she read kind of was like what got my, you know,
so Deadly start. Screenplay is one of them?
Deadly Gamble.
Deadly Gamble, yeah. Deadly Gamble.
So that's how me and Mario met, and that's how I brought him in. And we've been pretty good friends mm-hmm. since, man. So randomly met, because I run a side business, we met, and he saw that I play poker. He's like, hey man, this is weird, but I'm writing a movie about poker. I need someone to come. And so originally, I think I was supposed to just come on to like help some of the actors to just show them how to play. And then Mary's like, why don't you just jump in the scene?
Yeah.
So then I end up, and then we've been friends ever since, working on projects and doing that. But I thought, you know, his story is really cool, and we you know, be good for our podcast.
Yeah.
So what's like a good storyline for Deadly Gambler?
What's it about? Basically, so it's about a degenerate gambler that gets into the Russian mafia, borrows money off his mom, tells her that he's using the money for like a side business that he's starting up, but he's not. He's using that to gamble, basically, and he risks the lives of his family if he never pays the money back, basically. Mm-hmm. So they give him an ultimatum. They're like, listen, you're going to pay the money back, or we're going to kill your family. And he takes the risk, and then, you know.
It kind of
plays its way out. Nah, don't work.
Without giving too much away.
I still have hope.
Yeah,
it's not a Disney, it's not a Disney movie. It doesn't end
it doesn't end well. My films tend to be pretty dark that way. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
So for our listeners and viewers, how can they find that movie right
now? That is actually still on, it's a Walmart streaming site called Vudu. It's on Vudu. Yeah. It's on Amazon Prime still. It's on Epix, which is a huge new platform.
Yeah.
And I believe it's on Fandango now too, which is like another big one. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man.
So now, how does that work? Do you get like royalties every time somebody?
You'd like to think you do. the distributors sometimes can, you know, it depends on what distributor you're with, but it's a tough man because like what I've learned since I've been doing this is you want to get money up front.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because you never know like how they're gonna mark things off on their end and all that.
Yeah.
We've gotten some money, but nothing really, you know, to take home about. So
it's kind of like in the beginning, it's like getting your name out
there.
That's
right. You're building a name for yourself, yeah. Yeah. And now what I've done is, you know, not worried about so much about like what I'm making off the films, but getting hired work like in the area, like where I'm getting paid to direct other people's movies because they see that I built my name up. Right, so that's kind of like where my career's taking me. When I first got into it, I was like, oh, I'm going to make $1 million off this and off that. Nah, it ain't like that.
Right.
Until, like, you really, like, get a big budget behind you. So you need, like, a, you know, X amount of dollars to make X amount of dollars kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at this point, I'm getting paid work, which is great. So
that's what's
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
that's what's
exactly.
Yeah. So obviously, Corey, I've been coming on here. We're doing some, like, safety projects, safety right. conversations. So I thought of some ideas, like, what exactly would tie into this? So I thought of some safety for on-set stuff, like, I know you have a personal story. I think you had an accident right on set.
Yeah,
so how did,
terrible, man.
How did that go? So, like, let's talk safety on set, right?
Yeah. So, obviously, first and foremost, I'm always concerned about the safety of my crew and my actors because if somebody gets hurt on set, it's going to come down on me because I'm the producer behind the whole thing. So I'm always, you know, cautious of that. Yeah, that really opened my eyes. That was in 2015 on the set of my second movie, The Listing. It was, like, the third day. We had two cars in a scene. One car was pulling away. And the guy jumped out of the car and didn't put it into park, and the car was still rolling. So he tried to get back in the car and put the brakes on, but he slammed the gas. He hit the gas, and he banged into another car right on set. And, you know, thank God it could have been bad because we had kids in the scene, like running around. So if, like, a kid was in between the two cars, God forbid, like, it could have been real bad. And everybody was saying that day that it was like, man, that could have been a lot worse because, you know, I was distraught that two cars just hit each other.
Yeah.
But then people were like, dude, like, you know, a kid could have got hit there, and, you know, in between two cars or somebody else. So I count my blessings there, but it really opened my eyes to, like, you know, like, having, like, full insurance, like, having full safety precautions and all that.
Right.
But
yeah, did you at least get it on video?
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? It's in the outtakes on the DVD. It's in the outtake section.
Okay.
Yeah, I put that in there, so.
Yeah, I mean, leave it to me to ask the ridiculous question.
Yeah, it's in there.
Safety with personal horror stories. Any personal horror stories?
Yeah, I do. I thought of that on the way up. When I was 17, I was in a movie theater in Summerdale. I was there, like, it was like the last movie. Being shown at night, you know, they have like that one last movie.
Yeah.
And me and my best friend were leaving, and some guy was all high on drugs. You know, like when you go to buy the tickets in that glass booth, like where you go in there. So I'm leaving, and he comes up with a gun.
Damn.
And yeah, he put it to my head. He put it to my head and cornered me. So I tried getting around out, and then I tried opening that door, and it was locked. I don't know why they locked the doors. I guess because it was the last screening, so they must have only had the one door open.
Yeah.
So he put a gun to my head and asked me if I believed in God. That was, like, still to this day I get chills.
Wow.
Yeah. He asked me if I believed in God, but then his girlfriend, I guess whoever it was, tried beating him off me. She's like, "What are you doing?" Like, going crazy, and you know, she ended up getting him off, and then I had the cops involved. And what's funny about that story is they go, "We're sorry, Mr. Cerrito, we're sorry." And they go, "We'll give you free tickets for a year." I'm like, now why would I want free tickets at a place I just got a gun to my head?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I gave my dad the free ticket for Father's Day. Father's Day was like a week away. So
now the lesson that I could definitely take from that is that violates the fire code. You can't have people occupying a structure and have all those doors.
I don't understand. They must have just closed them down, and then they had the one open, and the part of the part that I was in, they were locked.
Yeah. It happens all the time, and I'm the guy who has the bad luck that I'll be going somewhere with my wife, I'll try to open a door for her, like, I'll get the one that's locked, and then, you know.
Yeah,
that violates fire code.
Right, exactly.
So you get a safety.
So we talk about safety, too. That's a good story, because we talk about safety of just, like, knowing your surroundings and, you know, trying to play the best card of basically what you could do in those situations. Was there anything you think you could have done, or?
Nah, I was young. I was 17, so I didn't really, you know what I mean? I wasn't even really a full man yet either. Like, I was still a kid. And honestly, like, when the gun was at my head, I didn't really want to move. So it was
good
scary.
Choice. Good choice.
Yeah, it was real scary, man. And that shook me up for like a year. My mom said I didn't really go out of the house for like a year. Some kind of like PTSD or whatever.
But had you been thinking about making movies at that
point? No, I didn't even get into film until, what am I, 35, 28? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was an athlete, like in high school and all. But no, I actually, some of the, what's weird is some of that stuff I bring into my films. I think that's why I'm so dark. in my films because of stuff like that. So
I was listening to a podcast with Rob Zombie, and he was talking about that. He's like, dude, the scariest stuff in his life is the stuff you actually experience.
That's right.
And
you
know, he's like, I twisted a little bit, but he's like, a lot of my stuff that I bring in are from like true stories or things that he saw.
Sure.
He'll just manipulate and become something a little more extreme.
Absolutely.
But he's like, that's the scary stuff, is like the stuff you actually experience.
Well, yeah, especially when you write, because, you know, it's hard to write if you haven't experienced something. You know what I mean? So, you know, when you're writing a screenplay, if you take stuff from like your life, you can really embellish on it. Whereas if you're like writing about being a cop, I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
But if I know about something else, you know what I mean? So that's what he means by that, for sure.
So that's one of the things that's difficult, is watching a movie and they have cops or they have gunfights on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just want to shake.
Yeah, because you know, it's not accurate a lot of times. Yeah.
Like you being an athlete, you watch like a baseball or a movie and they have like the fake athlete scenes in it, you're probably shaking your head all the time. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Because, you know where I do that a lot is... like poker films. If you watch poker, a lot of times they're not accurate, like with the way they do stuff. I'm like, dude, that's not how it is.
Yeah. Makes them like crazy.
Yeah. Now the 007, are they good?
They're good. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they get the budget. They can go.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You have advisors and exactly.
That's the thing. Yeah. What else we got here? You, I wrote down, you just had a film release that obviously I was a little bit a part of, so I want you to maybe talk a little bit about that, what your experience was with that, and that just hit store shelves nationwide, right?
Pretty cool, yeah. That was the listing, the one I was touching on, that I did in 2015. That was released worldwide just in November. But yeah, that it was really surreal, because like I said, when I first got into this, one of my dreams was to see... like a movie that I wrote, produced, and directed in a store. Like, to me, that was like the ultimate, like the store selling my product that came from my brain. So like when I went into the Barnes and Nobles, it was like on the shelves in the store, and I was like, that's crazy.
That's awesome.
It's good, you know, it's good that you got experience, because honestly, probably in 10, 15 years, there probably won't be any kind of video that you can even buy in the store.
That's what I'm saying, man. And it's like, you know what I mean? Because like I could have missed that cusp where they just stopped doing that altogether.
Yeah.
And then you're never in the store. You know what I mean? You would just be on like the internet, which is, that's cool. Like that's still cool. But like to actually see the physical product on the shelf is crazy. And that was like real surreal.
So no spoiler alert.
Yeah.
What is the trailer for the listing?
The listing. So what's basically like the premise behind the listing. It's about a realtor that has like the perfect life, the wife, the house, the kids, you know, everything's going great. And then in a matter of a second, his son gets kidnapped and he's blackmailed with a letter on his car. When he goes to look for him, it's under his windshield. And it says, you have 24 hours to, you have 24 hours to deliver 6 dead bodies in one location. He goes, don't notify the police. If you notify the police and we get tipped off, we're just gonna kill the kid. So he's got to like deliver 6 dead bodies in 24 hours, and he has to use his house. He's a realtor, so he has an open house the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So he uses that house for unsuspected guests who think they're looking at a house to buy. They have no clue that the realtor's ready to pop them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's like a suspense thriller, and you know, it's a race against time, and
So to my viewers and followers, I do a lot of realtor safety training.
Okay.
For realtors.
Well, there you go.
So they're going to be like, Corey, we don't know where your true allegiance is here.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's like the polar opposite of what
I. So yeah, that's the premise behind it.
We'll pretend you didn't say that.
Yeah, right.
And so you just had a signing for that, right, at Barnes & Noble. How'd that go?
That was super cool. So Barnes & Noble's hosted me to have a DVD signing, which was awesome. They promoted it in the store. They had like signs of me and all that's surreal, man. Like when you're in a business like filmmaking, the competition, number one, so fierce, you know what I mean? And especially when you don't have any formal education in it, you're already like at the odds, you know what I mean? Cause there's kids coming out of college that, you know, they got all the best equipment and all that. But when you are rising above that, and then you see the stores actually having signs in there with your name on it, it's just surreal, and it validates what you're doing. So it's like, and that was awesome, you know what I mean? They held a signing for me. People came in, I was signing DVDs, pictures, and all that. So
that's
it was
great,
super cool, man. Yeah, it was cool.
And any more in the future? Any plans of anything else coming up?
I mean, I'll be at Moorestown Barnes & Noble, believe it or not, on February 1st signing the listing there. They're holding one for me too. What's that, in like a week? I'll be there, from 1 to 5. That's a Saturday. I mean, I got a lot of stuff happening, you know, Human Hibachi. I got I just directed another film one night.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Human Hibachi, it's called, yeah.
So that's his next film, right?
Yeah,
so
that one's crazy.
I want to talk a little bit about
that. It sounds a little crazy.
Yeah, it's a little crazy.
I want to talk a little bit about that was, I guess you can kind of explain, you did this one a little different, the way that you shot the film, which I think is pretty cool.
Yep.
So you want to talk a little bit about that?
So,
no spoilers.
This one's probably my favorite. In terms of creativity and style, it's a whole movie's filmed on an iPhone.
Oh, great.
There's not, there's a couple like surveillance shots and all that, but the whole thing is done on an iPhone for the reason being it's supposed to be like, you know, look real. Like, you remember the Blair Witch Project and all that back day?
Okay. That's what you made me think of when you said that.
Right. That's what I you know, I wrote a completely original premise, Human Hibachi. It's, as you can probably just, the wheels are turning.
I'm trying not to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm still having trouble with the listing, so.
Right, yeah. So this one's even darker.
Okay.
Yeah, but this, it was really cool. I did it all on an iPhone. I just got done the final cut, and I submitted it to New Jersey Horror Con Film Festival. So hopefully it'll be picked up for that and screened in March. So.
Right. And you went down to the last Horror Con, right? Mm-hmm. How was that?
Awesome. We had a booth promoting the film. It was pretty cool. Pictures I have online, like, it was all bloody and crazy. But yeah, it was cool. We had a lot of fans come out. We were signing autographs. I had two of the actors there signing autographs, handing out information on the film. So.
Taking selfies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's man. Great. Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know what's funny is like some women were coming up to the table. Holding up some like gruesome stuff, taking selfies and nothing. Yeah, it was crazy. So
that's cool. You know, there was another movie that was filmed, Cloverfield. Do you remember Cloverfield?
Yeah, that's the same way. It's called found footage, basically.
Found
footage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the style. Found footage, which is this, like, it's basically supposed to be like if cops were to come in and find a cell phone on a crime scene, and then you discover everything that these guys, like, they filmed it, basically.
Yeah.
And then the cops came and got the phone, and now it's out to the world to see.
Oh, see, now I really like that stuff.
That's how Human Hibachi is.
Oh, I really like that
stuff. And I have, like, where the cops are, like, in it, where, like, you know, they're, you know, this is, they're presenting the, basically what happens is they present the footage to the mom of the person that died, and, like, you see it in, like, a, what's that, like, interrogation room?
Yeah.
You see him, like, play the movie, like, you'll see him play it, and then that's how the movie starts. So, like, he'll touch the keyboard, and that's how the, so it's kind of cool how it tied
really
it all in.
Cool, man.
Yeah, I think this is going to be big, man.
Yeah, man.
I mean, the name alone just hooks you in.
Yeah, it is. Well,
especially the name does something.
Yeah. if you're into, like, horror, especially, Human Hibachi, people are just going to be like, what is this?
Yeah, I think it just stands
curiosity
out.
Curiosity killed the cat kind of thing?
Yeah. I think it just stands out, and it's like
so original. So the three movies that we can have people definitely look for are...
The listing's definitely out right now. That's Amazon Prime. The DVDs are, like, on every big retailer, Best Buy, all that kind of stuff. And then the Deadly Gamble is where I said before, and Human Hibachi's not out yet.
Okay.
Yeah, not out yet.
You're looking for a HorrorCon release, hopefully.
Yeah, that'll be premiere. Like the premiere, basically.
And that will be, where's that at?
The Showboat, Atlantic City.
Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And that's so, in the summer?
End of March.
End of March?
Yeah, end of March, cool. So.
So that's cool. So we put this out on social media this past week, and we had a couple of social media questions that came through. Matt Morosi asked on Twitter, what do you look for during an audition?
Confidence. Number one, confidence. So, like, when you're holding an audition, you get a whole bunch of people coming in, and I would say 3/4 of them come in with no confidence. So when you come in with confidence, number one, I'm going to know right away that you're going to have confidence when we go and film. Number two, headshots. So a lot of times, like, the actors have, like, they're like 8x10 headshots that they'll bring in. Some actors won't bring that in, and what a headshot is that I'm going to remember your name, your face, and then I got your contact info. So some actors will come in, they don't bring that, and they're never going to get the role unless they literally blow me away.
Really?
Think about it. Yeah, I mean, like, that's like your resume. Like, it literally, like, it'll have your face, and then when you turn it over, it has their resume, their number, their email, everything. So that's, like, that's huge.
So it's like a giant business card.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's not digital yet. Like, you don't want all this stuff emailed and have to try and search it later.
No.
You'll be able to have a nice picture right there and be like,
exactly. Because what I'll do at the end of the audition is I'll have a stack of them, and I'll remember the face, and I'll just say no, yes, no, and I'll have a yes pile. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I might have 6 yeses and 50 nos, but then I'll go, and then we'll consult on who we all thought was the best, so.
So you can really tell that, because I know I've been doing this for about a year and a half, like with a TV show and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you would not have picked me the first day. Yeah. I was so nervous.
Well, man. And it is, and that's the hardest thing is, I would say like 3/4 of them come in confident. But, you know, a quarter of them come in just like, you know, they should be there. You know
now,
I mean?
Have you ever had anybody that came in and then maybe 2-3 years later you ran into them again and their confidence levels
went
up because
absolutely.
Of the experience?
Yeah. I've had, like, people come in on one of my films and then 3 years later they audition again and I actually cast somebody that way.
Really?
I didn't cast them the first one, then I cast them the second one because, you know, they brought it.
Okay.
And that's the thing. And a lot of them are like, you got to be able to... Like if I say, like, do something, like, a lot of times you'll be acting a certain way, and then I'll be like, okay, now let me see you cry. And then they're like, oh, I can't do that. And then it's like, well, yeah.
That's
so,
the only thing I can do, because I have probably dry eyes. That's the only thing I can do.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's being, I would never be an actor, man. That's tough racket, just because, you know,
Martin Olea, I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, said, and I think you put a little bit out there right now, but what's the best advice for an aspiring actor or actress wanting to get their foot in the door?
Take gigs. Anytime you get a gig, don't turn it down. And the number one thing that I come across is a lot of them will, especially like beginning actors, they'll say, well, how much am I getting paid? Well, number one, that never, ever, ever, if you have no resume, don't ask that because you're not going to get paid. A lot of actors, when they first start, you got to build a resume because, you know, nobody hired me. I couldn't just start directing and say, how much am I going to... If I went to a producer and I said, well, how much are you going to pay me? They'd be like, well, let me see your resume. How am I going to pay if you? I don't even know what you can do yet. So basically, and a lot, you know, a lot of actors are smart. They know that, you know, the first couple gigs are not going to get paid. But that's probably the number one thing I'd say is take work when you get it because it's not, you know, it's scarce. And then when you get it, don't take them, like, don't just like say how much money I'm getting. Is $50 a day worth your career? No. And that is, I'm telling you, and I know a lot of producers, that'll turn them off. So that's number one.
Experience.
Yeah, so instead of sitting home doing Netflix and chill, go out.
That's
and
it, man.
Get
yeah, exactly.
And
right.
I know,
exactly.
And I know from working on some of the stuff with you, one of the big problems that I just noticed from watching and being a part of stuff, it's amazing how many people I'll say, oh, yeah, I'm friends with Mario, we're working on a project.
Right.
And people will say, oh, man, I want to be in a movie. I want to be in that movie. And
all the time, man.
And I go, all right, well, you know, when Mario puts something out, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
And I'll put it out and say, oh, he needs 50 extras on, you know, Friday. Oh, yeah, I'll do it.
They'll show up.
They don't show up.
They don't show up.
You know, and so it's one of those things, that just anything in life, anything
man.
Kind of work. It's about
dedication
showing up.
Too.
It's about showing up and putting in the time and effort.
Exactly.
You know, everyone wants to be a celebrity, but they don't
want
to get
the
work
small role.
To get to there.
Right,
they
exactly.
just want to wake up and be there.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And you're exactly right. Yeah. And like I said, that whole thing, man, is like when they come and say, well, how much am I getting paid? You're not getting, like, I could have cast you already.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you say that, you're gone.
Yeah.
Because you're not hungry. Number one, you're all about the money, and then that's going to evolve into something worse later.
Right,
that's
right.
Never good.
Making poor choices.
Yeah. Now, if they got a resume,
yeah,
I'll pay you. I have no problem paying you.
Yeah, they got a following, right?
Exactly.
They got
a following. They got a resume.
Experience,
they're good.
Network. You know, like everything.
No problem.
Yeah.
But when they're a rookie, I mean, dude, like you got to make your bones. Like,
yeah.
That's just how it is.
We got anybody asking any questions on the live?
I turned it off because the sound kept playing through,
okay.
So I didn't want to.
I can't read those little letters. I think
yeah.
I got somebody over there, but.
I got one last question from Twitter, from BGGM. He said, will we get a second round of Human Hibachi if the first one does well?
So BGGM, he actually screened Hibachi. He saw it. He's a film critic.
So I guess he's hungry for second.
He's already ready for the second one, this guy. Yeah, he's a great dude. But yeah, I have thought about writing a second one. So that, you know, depending on how this one really does, definitely in the works. Yeah.
Sushi seconds or?
Sushi, say sushi again, man. Yeah, say sushi.
It sounds like you guys got some inside jokes that I'm not aware of.
When you see the film, if you watch it.
I'll watch it.
Yeah, you
I'll
should, yeah.
It.
But it the whole thing is if you say sushi, you end up dead.
Okay.
When they take your picture and yeah, good things don't happen when you say sushi.
Like Beetlejuice, right?
That's right. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So.
I remember the first time I had sushi, I didn't enjoy it, but now I do.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
I
it's
acquired,
yeah, it's acquired right.
taste. Yeah.
Yeah,
and after just watch this movie, you might not want to eat sushi.
Nah, yeah, dude. Yeah, you. Nah.
So I wanted to follow back up on with safety on the set and stuff like that. Brandon Lee, I think he was one of the actors,
yeah.
Bruce Lee's son, that was apparently killed by a loaded firearm that was supposed to not be loaded and double-checked.
Yep.
Have you been aware of any major incidents on other film, things like that?
Another film that I know about where something happened?
Or, yeah, just out there that people can
kind
of like pick up on?
Man, I forget her name, but it was actually a Hollywood film. They were doing a scene on a train track, and evidently they were supposed to have clearance, like there was no trains coming. I believe it was like an indie Hollywood film, so it was like a lower budget, maybe like a couple million dollars, but anyway. You know, they thought they had clearance on the train. No trains were supposed to come. They were setting up like a, it was supposed to be like a dream sequence on the railroad track, and they had a bed on the railroad track, like the guy was supposed to wake up and be on the railroad track.
Yeah.
And evidently the train came and killed one of the production assistants.
Oh, yeah.
So you can see it on YouTube. I forget the girl's name, Sarah something. But if you Google like railroad tracks, like film,
yeah,
it'll come up. They literally had to, like, they saw the train, they heard it, and they had to clear the whole set. And when the train came by, something drug her and she died. So, I mean, that was like a big thing in the film world, was like, mm-hmm. How did that happen? Like,
right. you were actively making films at that time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's actually, we on our film slate, for the listing, you know, there's the Clapper, the film slate.
Yeah.
We had rest in peace, Sarah, her name was on the film slate for like a month. Just because it was like, it like, damn, like, how does that happen? Like, you're supposed to have clearance,
right?
And a young girl died, so that was crazy. And that's what's like so key about safety on a film set, is stuff like that can happen at any time, and something that you're doing that's fun can turn tragic in a matter of,
right. So did you have a designated safety officer or something like that?
A lot of times, you might have like a production assistant that'll lock down the set a lot of times. So, like, you know what I mean? They'll lock it down in terms of like, if we're filming here, they'll be watching, or they'll be like, if people are trying to come through, they'll like, you know what
okay.
I mean? But at my level, you don't really have a designated like person for it, just because the budget's always tight,
right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So you try and outsource it to like who's on your crew.
So when the budget gets bigger, me and Corey will come in and be your professional.
Yeah, then exactly.
Safety
that's it, man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wear the shirts and all, man.
Yeah, exactly.
See that?
So this is a side note, because you brought that up. This week, I don't know if you saw it, Governor Murphy just signed a law on Tuesday, like out of nowhere. In New Jersey, it's actually now illegal to sell and I believe possess imitation firearms, including airsoft. So like those airsoft that look like real guns, mm-hmm. they have to, if they're not labeled or they're not like orange tipped or they're not like completely different or whatever, but they look like a real gun,
yeah.
Completely illegal now. And one of the exceptions was, except on movies.
Oh, really?
If you're using them for movie props, then that is one of the exceptions in the law.
You know what's funny, man, is bringing up like guns and all on set is like every time I've used guns in a couple of my films, like, dude, that is like scary, man. Like, seriously, because like you just don't know. Like, you double check, you triple check, you quadruple check.
You have to, yeah.
And but still, like that has been actually going back to like what you asked me about, like scary stuff on set. That is the scariest thing I've been a part of, is like when like somebody will put a gun to somebody. And I'm like, damn, dude, I just like say my prayers. I'm like, I swear to, because you know, you just don't know.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being responsible for that?
No.
and it crosses your mind, yeah. Though, because you're like, just some freak accident, like where the gun actually had a bullet lodged in there and it comes out. Like, yeah. That is what always scares me. And I've had to deal with it three times. I've had guns.
So they don't make fake prop guns that are only work on.
They do.
I guess they're like super expensive or something
they
like that.
They are, and. Yeah,
you can tell that you'd rather.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, yeah, I'd rather have like mostly use the real thing just because it looks real.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will be like, you know what I mean? So you never want that shadow of doubt, but you know, that's been super scary.
Yeah. Well, I know law enforcement, a lot of unintentional firearms deaths are related to training.
Right.
And as a firearm instructor, that was one of the things I always took seriously, was I would be a pain. People sometimes would hate to come to my class because I would make the captain, who just wanted to come and sit down and watch for a half hour, said, you gotta put your gun in the trunk, sir.
Yeah.
Sorry. And he's like, really? I'm not even training. I remember this one captain from this one PD.
Yeah, man.
He like, are you really gonna do this, Corey? I'm like, yeah. So I can't have a live gun in there
exactly,
because of that.
Exactly.
Someone grabs the wrong one, you know, you gotta be 100%. Like you said, you gotta check everyone's pockets, make sure no one else has extra ammo or a magazine that has ammo in it and they replaced it. So it's like, yeah, you gotta.
Yeah, like this Sunday, I'm shooting a film scene, the one that we had talked about. And there's a knife involved, but I'm thinking about getting a fake knife just because.
Yeah, it slips, someone slips, falls, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I've used a lot of real knives, and that's always been another thing that your blood pressure goes through the roof in a scene. Yeah, because what happens is the actors are so in the moment, you know what I mean, of doing their scene, that they're forgetting about safety. They're forgetting about.
Yeah, their mind's tough.
Their mind's not there. Their mind's on like doing something. They have a knife, and it's just.
Yeah, and you can't really expect them to kind of think.
Nah,
like that. You want them to be
in
the moment, right?
Exactly, exactly. So.
Cool. Now, have you been in any of your movies?
Yeah, I do little bit pieces. I'm not an actor.
So you're like M. Night Shyamalan? You make
play
through every once in a while?
Yeah, I wouldn't tout myself as an actor, though.
Okay.
Yeah. I just do it. I'm actually, I didn't do it in my newest one because I know I'm not that good. So
don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
I just met you and I'm like, this guy's great on a podcast. You know?
That's funny.
So that's all the questions I got from social media today. Cool, but you got anything else, Corey, for today?
Yeah. Well, I just want to, like, we got the three movies. We got where we can find them. Just to make it interesting, like, give me something like your dream movie. Like, if you could make, like, you know, be involved in, like, there's a whole bunch of new avatars coming out, you know?
Right. So, like, what would my dream scenario be here?
If someone walked in and said, listen, we're going to grant you your wish. You can do any movie, any idea, budget, you name it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Will you tell me? Like,
I wouldn't do Mob. I used to want to do Mob, but I wouldn't just because it's been done so many times. You know, I still have an interest in that, like the Irishman. I don't know if you've seen that on Netflix.
Loved it.
Yeah, I do love mob films. Would I do one? No, just because the best has already done them in terms of Scorsese and all that. I would probably use, I have a lot of ideas in my head that I can't physically do because of the budget. So I would probably take one of the ideas I have, turn it into a screenplay. So if they came up to me and be like, listen, here's $50 million, go do your thing.
Right.
I would probably take one of the ideas that I have sitting and go and do that. And in my opinion, I could probably make a top-notch film with a big budget like that just because of the original ideas.
Okay.
So that's probably what I would do is...
Yeah. You notice how he's keeping those ideas
on. Yeah, he's not there. What are your ideas?
The one that I have, I have a couple, you know. But
don't worry, nobody watches my Facebook or listens to my podcast. You can say anything. You're good.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, it's super cool. It's something that... Remember, like, Saw? So it's something that would be like...
psychological thriller kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's something that would be like where people would be like, damn, like this is crazy.
Yeah.
But I can't physically do it because I don't have the budget.
Right.
That's the part, like when you're an indie filmmaker, you're handicapped by budget. I always describe it as like if a baseball player were hitting with a bat, give all the other players a regular bat, but then if you give somebody a broomstick, it's going to be harder to hit the ball. I'm hitting with a broomstick because of budget.
Right, right.
So. Okay. That's how it is.
If you play for the Houston Astros, they would tell you to
pitch. Then you can do it. Yeah. Shit, man.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, they would help you out a lot.
Cheaters.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great, man.
Yeah. Cheaters.
Incredible. So I want to tie all this together now. You're a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
We're on film right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put you on the spot. I want you to give me some tips so I can step up my game. Because I'm in front of these cameras like twice a week.
Right.
One tip did you give me? Not necessarily that's personal to me, but just like you said confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, another tip somebody gave me. They said, Corey, when you're talking to the camera, don't talk to the camera. If you were telling your best friend a story, the way you would say, he said, oh my goodness, you'll never believe what just happened.
So yeah. So I'll give you what I always tell my actors. I always use the same example. So if you were to go to a bar, okay, say you go into a restaurant and you put a camera on the bar, and these people aren't actors, right? If you put a camera on them, and they don't know the camera's there, you're gonna get the best scene at a bar that you'll ever get. Hollywood won't be able to beat it because it's natural.
Yeah, it's natural.
Now, as soon as you say to them, all right, guys, we're gonna throw the lights on you, we're gonna get sound rolling, we're gonna get the camera rolling, as soon as you say action, it's gonna look bad because they're overcompensating, they're trying, they're doing this, they get stage fright. So my biggest thing is just be natural, man. Be yourself, be who you are before you started this.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or be who, you know, the actors are, the natural. It's all about being natural because natural comes off as great when you overcompensate. And that's one thing like why my films are pretty good is because I always tell the actors, don't act, just be you.
Right.
Take that character and just let it be you.
Right.
And that's what I would say is natural. You can never like, and you can't really like comment badly on natural because that's who you are. That's what they are.
So. And that's what you cast, right? You pick that actor because
100%.
He or she in your brain captures the scene. 100%. Right.
Yeah. So it's always about like, forget the cameras rolling, forget where you're at and just be you, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, that bar scene, if you interpret that in your mind, like, damn, that makes sense. Like as soon as I tell the bar, listen, it's not going to be what I filmed when they didn't know. It's going to look different.
Right. So now you got to do it twice, right? Film when they're not paying attention.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. So that would be my advice is just, forget where you're at and just do you.
So I'm going to tell my producer, I was like, film my show twice and don't tell me
Don't tell me where we're starting, where we're ending.
Man.
That's what I like about the podcast. They're more relaxed. Like, it's just conversation. Because when I saw Mary's, how it goes, I said, listen, it's more just of a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, we do ask questions, but it's more of just a flow of conversation and where it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I mean, that's it's like you said, you're at the bar, you're bullshitting with your friends, you're not like going completely scripted. Nah, we're just going off telling stories and going off that. So I try to keep an outline, but at the same time, the flow is just better that way.
I think if I had like two shots too, that would probably that would really help me be perfect on camera.
Now this turned into a drinking show. What happened?
Yeah, I've done that too, man. That works, man. Yeah. Before I was signing at Barnes & Noble, I was super excited like leading up to it, and then like the day of the signing, I was like, oh shit, I have anxiety, like bad. And my wife was like, are you, like, how bad? I was like, I need to take like shots or something. So I actually did that, calmed myself down, went right in, and it was fine.
See,
it works though, man.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this isn't water. It looks like water, but
yeah.
It's not water.
That's
so
great.
We do have to wrap this up.
Sure.
We're getting close to the time. But I want to get everybody's social media, so how we can find you. So how can we find you?
So I've been on here, obviously, a couple times. You guys can find me at Edahoge on Twitter. That's the best way to get a hold of me. And I've been posting on there, too. I usually post on there before we do a podcast what we're doing, if I'm coming on with Corey. And I always appreciate any kind of questions you guys got, and I'll relay them for sure, whoever the guests are or whatever our topic is for sure. So Edahoge at Twitter.
Cool. Making me hungry.
Sushi.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on Twitter at Mario Cerrito 3, and then on Facebook at Mario Cerrito III, which is the third. Yeah, so I'm pretty active on there, and I got my film Facebook pages as well, the listing. Human Hibachi and Deadly Gamble, they're all on Facebook.
Cool. And you guys know me, Safety Man Security Consultant, safetyman.co, safetyman.co. And I want to thank RVNTV.TV for hosting us here.
Yes.
RVNTV.TV for hosting us. And I'm going to hopefully get you on that show soon.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome, man.
So we're signing off now. I got to do that awkward thing and walk up and hit the stop button. Finish.